Welcome to the Technology Lab, presented by CPA Practice Advisor, with your hosts, Randy Johnston and Brian Tankersley.
Welcome to Technology Lab. I'm Randy Johnston with co-host Brian Tankersley, and we are so pleased to have our guest with us today, Jeff Gramlich, who is the Managing Director of Accounting at Validus. Now, I've known Jeff a long time, 20 plus years, and my rule of thumb with Jeff is when he tells me something's going on, I believe him because I think I've always known him to be right on his observations. But this is also a little interesting presentation for us today, simply because this will be a little more audit-centric. So co-host Brian has always introduced himself as a recovering auditor. He's been both an internal and external auditor through the years. And as we've watched the evolution of audit tools, this period is an exceptionally volatile period, as we would see it, because so many of your platforms for prep, comp, and review, as well as audit, are changing. So I know that Jeff just came back from the IAF conference. We'll talk a little bit about that. But Jeff, welcome, and we are so pleased to have you with us today.
Thanks, Randy and Brian. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. So let's lead off with, what's changing in the area of audit? I know I've got my opinions, but I'd rather hear from a leading professional in the area.
Well, I appreciate that, Randy. A lot's changing. You know, I think we've seen more in audit technology in the last 10 years than maybe the previous 20 or 30. And part of that is the availability of cloud solutions and technologies that take specific components of the audit and automate those manual tasks. And then part of it is around AI and what we've seen in the last 8, 9, 10 months and generative AI is made it for a very exciting time. So we've seen a lot in the technology world coming, but we're seeing that really to this construct and a different way of doing an audit. We've got partnerships across both sides of the pond. And we're seeing more, and what I spoke about in Europe was this data-driven audit concept. And so that's the biggest thing that's changing now. And we see that across all firm sizes from the big four down to the smaller technologically innovative audits. And all of that's been brought on by this new wave of technology to really look at data differently and to look at how we do audit and the audit steps and the procedures and the assumptions.
Yeah, that's very interesting, and I appreciate you joining us here today. You know, you've been one of the top executives for the software folks leading the profession for decades, and I appreciate your insights because you've been at the edge, you've been at the cutting edge of this for a while. So why is this changing now? And you know, it seems like when I look at the audit standards that have come out, and I look at the guidance that's put out there with the PPCs, the Wolters Kluwers, the others out there that put out audit guidance, I don't see this drive to eliminate sampling and go to 100% testing being as important as we hear in the trade press, and so it seems like there's kind of a disconnect there. Talk to that if you don't mind.
Yeah, so let's break that down. So you know, if you just do a 30-second history lesson here for a minute, we fundamentally have done audits the same way for almost 100 years in the States and over 100 years in Europe. And that is gather the client's data, go down our assumptions and our checklist, go down our procedures, and methodically and accurately, pull out a sample and test this against the sample, and then see if we get enough results back to where we're satisfied with that sample, or do we apply alternative procedures until we get an answer. And the profession has done a wonderful job over the years of being highly accurate and reliable with our audit approach. But that doesn't mean it's been a perfect world. And now with the construct of data and availability of data, do we have the ability to pull in data and look at it first, and then use the data and some analysis around the data at the top level to really then go look at the outlying events and transactions that occurred during the year and really audit instead of sampling, but statistically. So if I could tell you, Brian, you can audit the same way and pull in 100 samples out of a pool of 100,000, or I can go look at the data and tell you which are the specific 30 you need to look at. You might be more interested in looking at just those 30 instead of looking at 100 and waiting for the responses to get back and eliminate a lot of that, and then apply the proper procedures around the 30 that you know are statistically outlined. And we've never been able to do that before. We couldn't get data out of old systems. We extract the data and provide it in a standardized format, but we do it on premise systems and more on all the cloud systems, and our future certainly in cloud-based systems. We're accessing that data at the most granular transactional level, not just trial balance or just GL summary, but GL detail, GLAR and AP is what we do. And it's the availability of that data that's driving this.
And now you said we. Now I'm assuming you're talking about Validus, the group.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, absolutely. Talking about Validus and how we approach it. That's why the big four and the next largest firms and more advanced firms across the globe look to us for our data, because they need it consistently. That's the output side, but they need it at that most granular level. And that's the use case that auditors are most interested in, is when they can get that data. We don't want auditors, and auditors don't want to become data people. They've been forced to manipulate data and chase data and extract data over the years. Because if you think about it, when I did it, Brian, and I know I'm older than you, but our technology was a copy machine. We got paper, we copied it, we gave it back, and we were really good on a 10 key. We went from that process to just automating it by sending you by sending the auditor an Excel file, first DOS or Lotus 1-2-3 file, and then an Excel file. But we never changed the process. And now with our integrations, and including the one with the CPA.com and the DAS solution, that process is changing.
So how many ERPs do you tie it to at this point with Validus?
So we have the kind of the top 25 globally largest volume ERPs that are audited, and we keep adding to that every year. These are not connectors that are easy to build at this level of granularity, and we still can build 3 to 5 a year, and we keep getting better and better. We see some AI opportunities and machine learning that help us build that, Brian, and then we will eventually have a way to connect to all of them and do that. Now, all's a big word, so I want to be cautious about what I mean by that. We know we can get data at a granular level out of almost any system that we have seen heretofore. We'll build some of them very specifically, and what our customers tell us that are using it every day, it's the consistent approach of that granular data and the output, so that they know they can build their analysis and other routines one time and use many, because they're going to get a consistent look. And Randy, they don't have to learn another GL package. They don't have to learn the latest package that's out there for whatever reason. That is taken completely off the table. You don't have to learn anything. Just don't worry about the data. We're going to get you the data. Worry about being the auditor and other value-added insights around the data that only you can provide, because you know the client.
Yeah. So, Jeff, I think to our earliest conversations about, you know, which GL should we interface first and so forth. And frankly, the sophistication of the Validus platform over the last few years is, to me, stunning and superb that you've got 25 built and can do 3 to 5 a year right now. That's really nifty. You know, and I want to go a little bit back in the conversation, because this whole risk-based audit methodology that I think I sat on the committees at the AICPA about 20 years ago on that topic, you know, to me, being a real simplistic guy, I always tell people I'm from Kansas, which stands for KS, stands for keep it simple. To me, I see this audit getting to 100% data sets almost available on a daily basis,
right,
where you can almost do continuous monitoring. So to me, continuous auditing has been discussed around and been in deck for decades in enterprises like the Fortune 500. So why do you think this has not come down market to mid-market and, you know, Main Street businesses?
Yeah, great question. And so let me tell you a little bit different way to think of the market. There are those firms that have a defined digital journey across all of their lines of service. And with that defined digital journey, they know what their data needs are and how we're going to automate things over the next few years, because adoption within a firm is always a challenge, and they never have enough time to take on all these new technologies. So we look at firms two ways: ones that have those digital journeys and well-defined methodologies around what their data needs are and requests for data. And those firms we sell directly to. Then there is the other firms that need help and need guidance, because we can give them the data. If they don't know what to do with it, it's not a win for anybody. So they need need guidance from the AICPA through the DAS solution, through WK, through Thomson Reuters. They still need that guidance on how to use this data and how to grab the data, analyze the data, look at the data, and then change the procedures and the steps they're in. So I think that's the key. Which group do you fall in? And everybody's in one of those two buckets. The bigger firms have their own internal procedures and that they follow, and they know exactly what their data needs are. The continuous audit, Randy, you're right. We've talked about this for 20 years, and there was a big push to move work out of busy season for these mid-sized clients and so on. And by and large, for the most part, it didn't work. We moved work we created more work during the interim periods, but we still had the same burden during busy season and additional regulatory requirements and changes that didn't really shift that. The largest firms, the Fortune 500, they obviously have to do continuous audit. You cannot take on a client that size or of magnitude and transaction and sophistication sets that you can't just wait till the end of the year and pick that up. That's not going to happen. You'd spend all year doing it, and you couldn't put enough human resource on it to analyze it. So they continue to get better at it. What the standardized data approach gives them is a way to do it quicker and more efficiently and look at interim periods with a full data set. So when you think of an audit, the planning, the execution, reporting, we've built some best practices around each of those major phases around why to grab the data. You know, if I can get a look at the data 10 months in before and sit down with the CFO, instead of just rolling last year's questions in the planning phase of it and where I'm going to focus, if I have the data and I'm an auditor and I can look at that data and see what's gone on, my questions are much better.
Okay, so you mentioned this future state, and you mentioned that the big four and the big firms were already doing this. How does the U.S.'s audit profession compare to Europe and the rest of the world? Are we kind of leading this effort, or are we behind at this point?
I would say we're leading the effort. But I would say that, we're not like light years ahead of this, because the big four are global and they have global teams and platforms. It's not just the big four. It's the next largest groups beyond that, too. They have global teams with people very involved from all over the globe. And Europe and the European countries and staff are very creative, and they're playing a key role in making sure that those requirements, as they look to automate and streamline these procedures, that their requirements are taken into consideration, and they bring in some very creative ideas. In Europe, there are certain data sets that are also much further along than we are here in the States. I mean, they have standardized a lot of the banking, for example. So if you go over there and you look at bank data, it's much more standardized than it is here. So, we have a significant number of different types of banks, and thus the standardization underneath that is somewhat of a challenge. So in some cases, they're leading in that area. But in terms of just global input, Brian, at some fundamental level, an audit is an audit. And within these big firms, audit is the line of service that travels. Tax is very local in jurisdiction. And consulting is very project. So if you're a good auditor in the States, you can do it in Europe, vice versa. And if we can standardize on some of this automation and looking at the data, you just got a lot better.
So speaking of traveling, you know, as the pandemic hit, a lot of us went home. And there's a lot more remote work. And, you know, the big four have had significant outsource operations for 10 or more years. Tell me a little bit about how, you know, the skill needs are different today than they were when you and I started. So tell me a little bit about how the staffing is changing and how, you know, what a candidate looks like for 2030 for an audit firm.
Yes. So, you know, we're hiring more and more different skills because the pipeline for accounting graduates and master's students and auditors, you know, has continued to decline over the last couple of years. So the actual supply is down, and those taking the CPA exam, that's gone down as well. A couple of interesting statistics, though. Just 2 years ago, 2021, only 28% of the U.S. firms were hiring non-accounting majors to help in mainstream audit and tax, in other words, non-accounting across the board. That's up to 36%. We're seeing more people hired that are two things. And these are a little bit different, Brian. So the answer is going to be a little bit out there. Then one of them is more data scientists. That's the obvious answer. More people that understand data. And you guys get that. And so that's the obvious answer. But we're seeing more firms hire like a customer or client satisfaction manager. And we're seeing them hire non data scientists and then client satisfaction managers. What is that? It's like a project manager, very client focused, to make sure that we're communicating with the client, that the client's needs are getting satisfied, that the client inputs are timely, and instead of last minute kind of in a crisis mode, et cetera. And they're taking some of that communication load off of the auditor or the tax professional to just interact more cleanly and consistently with the client. So that's just a totally different profession. But one of the other statistics I want to give you guys, and this is very informal, I guess is the right word, or informal. I get to talk to partners at the big four and smaller firms almost every day. And one of the questions I started asking years ago is, what's your client load relative to, and because you're the technology partner trying to implement. And it's interesting, the answers I got. Most of them were at 30 to 35 or more clients a year. Yeah, and not uncommon. Some were way more than that. And now they're trying to implement some kind of, or evaluate some kind of new technology within the firm. And the way we ended up kind of drawing this down was firms that were actually advancing and making year-over-year progress, they had whittled their client load down to 15. So 15 came out to be kind of a magic number. If you're doing 15 client engagements or less, you had some time to give toward technology, innovation, and implementation and evaluation, you know, 10 to 20 hours a week. So that was a good number. And then the most advanced firms, their partners that were ahead of technology had actually whittled that client load down to zero. Took them 4 or 5 years to do that because you can't just unplug that quick. But they the ones that were really advancing at the most, they did not have carry that load. So 15 or less to get started and continue to work that down. Very unscientific, but an interesting number just the same. And what was interesting to me is that played out whether it was a small firm, you know, single office firm, or a global firm. There's just not enough time. Yeah.
Jeff, what a beautiful informal number. I'm like, aha, man, what a great number. 35. You're right. Most of the people that are, you know, leading these engagements, if they're involved, they're often involved at that level. Makes right. Beautiful sense. You got to have more time to be able to, well, as the phrase goes, work on the business. But right. Even zero is more insightful as I think about it. So. Right. Right. What an interesting take on that staffing. You are correct. I am so sad when auditors are data wranglers, is our right. New term for that. You know,
that's a good one. Yeah.
You know, all they really want to do is audit the data. And so many have been put in an unfortunate position. So this non-traditional accounting staffing makes a devil a lot of sense to me. I think for the last 10 years in my CPA firm tech assessments on larger firms, 100% of the time I've had a data scientist in my recommendations.
Right. And
the other one that's come along is the RPA positions have also leveraged robotic process automations have leveraged the professionals. Well, you know, speaking of leverage, you and I and Brian, I think, have all been thoughtful, along with maybe millions of other people, on generative AI. You know, we've done 5 different sessions here on the Technology Lab on AI. So talk to us a little bit about how you see AI and maybe generative AI in specific playing into the future.
Great, great question. Thank you, Randy. You know, I can answer that with a question, but I won't belabor the question. What's the one thing that makes AI better? Data, right? And when you think of generative AI, I'm gonna just talk about ChatGPT for just a second. In ChatGPT, we see this as a wonderful tool, because it's not the first question that's most important. It's the second and third and fourth, right? And it's the follow-up questions, and that's how ChatGPT gets better. And we've seen this used already. In fact, I saw a new job title, Randy, you could think about, and it's called a prompt engineer. And prompt meaning, you know, for ChatGPT and how to structure the questions. So I would encourage people to go out there and take a look at ChatGPT. And one way to think about it is to take a very detailed either audit accounting question or tax question that you know the answer to, you as the prompter, and you know it 100%. And so ask ChatGPT the first time around. There's high statistics it's going to get it wrong. But as you give it the answers and feed it what's right, it gets better. And what it can do is, with its inference tools and language understandings, is create letters and emails and other things that are very tightly and well-worded, right? Because sometimes communicating to the client, as I said earlier, is very, very important back then. So I saw an example of that at the Engage conference. I thought it was very... very interesting to see that. But we see these as tools. They are not here. You know, if we would have rolled this conversation, Randy, back 5 years ago, blockchain was going to eliminate auditors. You know, it was going to now we have auditors that audit the blockchain. So it didn't really eliminate us, you know, and I think there's probably more than a handful of firms that are doing quite well auditing the blockchain. So, you know, this is yet another, you know, forward-thinking way, but we have to embrace it as a tool and a way to get better, not as a blocker or something we should be worried about. How do I use this tool? But I'll go back to my comment about time. Somebody in the firm has got to take that by the lead. It's usually going to be a partner or senior manager level. And is the firm serious? Can you manage your client load down to 15 or less? That's the question.
Mm-hmm.
So Jeff, you've gone out here and you've helped create the ecosystem of software and tools and other things over the last few decades,
right,
that our profession uses. If you're sitting there looking at the map and the world as you see it, and you have an audit partner that's getting ready to, you know, that's trying to set sail and figure out how to avoid sandbars and getting stuck and that kind of stuff as they set sail into this new world of data, what advice would you give those partners that listen to this podcast?
Yeah, I'd say, you know, first and foremost, make an internal commitment. Pick somebody that really wants to do it, whether it's an up-and-coming junior person that just has a real eye for technology and desire to learn this and wants to just has a great appetite to be on the leading edge. Pick someone like that, not someone who's necessarily, their charge hours aren't quite where they are. That's not the right thing we want to look at. We want somebody that's interested and would take it on. Then let's look at how do we really give them the time and evaluate them based on other criteria, not old models. But we're gonna invest in the firm and invest in you to help us advance our firm by giving you time to go look at some of these. And then start internally by saying, where are our where are our pain points? You know, what are they and what are we still doing that is this highly manual, prone to error, somewhat repetitive, and so on and so forth. And then let's focus on some of that. And then let's start to look for various tools, whether it's from some of the larger vendors or the up and coming smaller vendors that are out there, because there is a plethora of tools out there. It can be mind boggling. So start with the end in mind. What are our pain points? Let's put together a feel for that and evaluation of that. And then I think the other piece of that is you have to look at all of this on a multi-year basis, because you're not going to get out of the annual cycle of busy season. And I've got the 3 months at the beginning of the year and a good 2 months at the end of the year where I have to just focus on client work. So any 12-month calendar year boils down to 6 or 7 months of time I can actually spend looking and evaluating.
Yeah, makes great sense, Jeff. Well, you know, your advice also on this focus on the technology, I'm just thinking about prompt engineering as you, have laid out. I actually wrote my last column for the publication on prompt engineering.
Oh, there you go. Okay, sorry, I'm behind.
No, you're not behind, because that just means we're kind of thinking in parallel. Yeah. And to me, that is a big area of opportunity, not only in audit, but in tax and in CAS and so forth. But we also do have to worry about some privacy issue and whatnot. So, but this whole thinking about optimizing our processes, in some cases, we'll be able to make revolutionary changes, in others, just evolutionary changes.
Right.
But you're right. You know, people have the work they have to get done. You know, let's call it a half a year. You laid it out as 5/12 of the year, but you've got to have the resources dedicated to make the transitions and the improvements really throughout. Well, you know, your insights today, super valuable to us. I know there are lots of other things that we should be asking you. I bet you we could go for an hour and we'd be fine on that. I do know that, not only from, prior times where you were at Wolters Kluwer, but today where you're at Validus, you know, the Validus tool, I think, has done a lot of good for the profession. So can you tell us just a little bit about how Validus is, helping all this future data-driven audit and staffing issues, and how's Validus helping the profession there?
Yeah, so I think, you know, there's a couple of things that we've tried to implement. One, as I mentioned earlier, we've created a best practice guide that we'll start to roll out in the next month or so about how to think about data in the different phases of the audit, and then just how to think about more broadly. We've got several partnerships, some already announced, some that will be announced, about more integrations of our data into other platforms, Randy, that for the firms that don't have the ability to build things necessarily internally or adopt them straight into their company like they are, or they prefer them into a broader workflow tool within the audit profession. We're getting ongoing requests. So the way we ongoing requests for additional data sets, more connectors, and that's going to be ongoing for us. We're going to stay very focused on what we think we do well, which is extracting that data at the lowest level and giving it to the world in a standardized format. So the way in which we do is really just try to start, as I said earlier, with their pain points and understand where their digital journey is. And is that that's something where they can take our data and know and get the most out of it directly with them? And that's a back and forth, because we don't want somebody to implement and then be disappointed because they didn't get enough out of it in that first year or two with us. So that's one way. And then another way is just to advise them to look at this solution or that solution where our data is already integrated and maybe a more complete answer for them. So do we want to sell everybody? Of course we do. That's why we're in business. But we want to form partnerships, because this does take an implementation strategy. It does take time, and it does take training and buy-in from the staff to get to use it, because, you know, it can still be considered, not mandatory, because it's not a regulation of some sort, whereas in previous worlds when we had tax regulations, those were rules set down by the IRS and the states and the local jurisdictions. And nobody got to vote on those rules, you know, other than voting for your congressperson or whatever. You know, we had to follow them. Once they were written, that's it. So those are mandatory requirements where the software responds, and then the CPA firms accordingly buy and they know they're in compliance. In this case, this is just a way to improve efficiency and improve quality, and I would continue need to look at them both at the same time.
Super, Jeff. Well, Brian and I were so excited to have you as a guest today. Of course, we both knew your expertise, and I just have a hunch Brian might have some parting burning questions. But Brian, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. Any other things that we should ask Jeff so our listeners can benefit from his expertise?
You know, I think we just need to get together a couple of times a year with Jeff, because I think Jeff is... I think you've got your finger on the pulse of how the profession is changing, as a leader in the industry, serving the profession and helping the profession get the right tools. And so maybe what we ought to do is get together in a few months again and kind of review the progress and visit again about things. And Jeff, it's always a pleasure. I'm sorry I missed you at Engage, and I hope to see you sometime later this year on the road.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Brian and Randy, and look forward to getting back together and seeing you in person. And we're past COVID, so now we can all see each other again. And that's very meaningful. And you guys know I like to talk about this, and I appreciate the nice compliment and always just trying to learn every day what I can.
Yep, understood, Jeff. Well, any other parting thoughts for our listeners? You know, again, you, as Brian just said, you're in the thick of it, and you know, we have the good pleasure between us of talking to a lot of firms. Any right. other parting insights?
You know, I would say, you know, as we sit here in July already for 2023, the year's already halfway gone and it goes very quick and they get faster. Maybe that's because the older we get, that's just the way it feels. But if you haven't started this year, at least make an attempt to identify that person internally that could actually start to spend some time on it. And if you can free them up for some of the back half of this year, pick one area and move. The only really thing that I think is not in the best interest of the firm is to just status quo and always think that. You gotta take that first step, and that's the hardest one. So let's take it, and feel free to reach out to me, and if we can help, and there's others. Randy, you and Brian are good at getting them to at least think about it and take that first step. And let's just focus on what some of the challenging areas are and see how to move that forward.
Well, that sounds beautiful. Jeff, thank you for your time this morning and spending the time that we've been together with our listeners. We do appreciate all of you listening in today. Join us in another Technology Lab for additional topics. Have a great day.
Thank you for sharing your time with us. We'll be back next week with a new edition of the Technology Lab, brought to you by CPA Practice Advisor.